Morning, Lord Willits. Morning, everyone. And thank you very much for having me here. So as Lord Willits said, I'm from the Department for Business, Energy and Industrial Strategy. And one of the primary responsibilities of the directorate I work in is to ensure we have an industrial strategy that delivers long-term economic growth and addresses the issues of low and slow productivity that the UK has faced for a very long time. Today's discussion on skills is pretty important to that agenda because, you know, as most, if not all of you will know, education and skills is a key component to addressing productivity challenges. You know, the ONS estimates, you know, that a fifth of the rise in productivity over the last 25 years can be attributed to improvements in the quality of the workforce. So it's pretty obvious that, you know, ensuring that businesses have access to the skilled workforce that they need is key to long-term economic growth and a more prosperous future economy. As everyone knows, it's really strange times, you know, and there's so many different factors impacting on our economic landscape, both at the national and global level. And there's probably nowhere else to start than COVID, which my previous panelists also mentioned. It's not only affected our way of life, but caused huge levels of unemployment. And many argue that we are unlikely to return to pre-COVID levels for a while. So many sectors have been badly hit and under pressure. And you know, it's fair to say that some of these sectors may not fully recover to their pre-crisis baselines, and it might have to be a case of rebuilding and moving in a new direction rather than returning to the status quo. And if we look at the people who are likely to be affected, we know the young, the lower paid, and, you know, likely women may actually be more affected than others. And then apart from COVID, you also have to deal with sort of global trends that we need to take into account, you know, the impact of automation and technological change and what impact that has on the workforce. You know, in 2017, it was estimated about 7% of jobs in the UK were at high risk of being affected by automation and about a further 65%, you know, at medium risk. I think depending on how long we have to deal with the pandemic, it's reasonable to expect that we will see an acceleration of automation, you know, particularly if traditional labor is seen as too unreliable in view of having to work to a new normal. Now, that's not to say that it would lead to a decline in employment, you know, but it will mean that people will have to perform tasks differently, you know, and, you know, people may spend time doing stuff that machines are less capable of or spend less time on physical activities. And then there's other trends that we have to also account for, you know, net zero and decarbonization, the opportunities that come from transitioning to a clean growth, focused economy, you know, the jobs that would create in low carbon sectors, you know, that could, you know, of course, offer opportunities for people to move out of low paid, low productivity jobs. You know, for instance, we're seeing a rise in skills to support transition to low emission vehicles. Things like this will be more important. Digital transformation, you know, I think everyone, you know, is probably very much up to speed on that. We've definitely seen a massive acceleration and emphasis on digital as a result of COVID, and I expect that to fully continue, you know, and let's not forget as well that our population is aging. You know, people are living longer, and as people get older, we can expect to see more people shift careers, reinventing themselves, picking up other careers, and the training that I think people undertake in later life will be as important as what they do at the start of their career. And then moving closer to home, of course, we have EU exits and, you know, what our future trading relationship with the EU looks like. So all of this actually, you know, will have an impact on what we do going forward. And I think if we think about this very much from a skills context, you know, where we have skills gaps and shortages in many sectors, you know, we know skills shortages is costing UK businesses about 4 billion per year. And UK firms will say, you know, lack of access to skills is the number one threat, you know, affecting their competitiveness. You know, when we talk about gaps and shortages, you know, we know it is very acute in STEM and digital, and these are areas that we think will drive new opportunities. 9 in 10 STEM businesses will, you know, will tell you they found it very difficult to get the skills they need, you know, and we see that with demand, with a rise in demand for digital skills, you know, on digital skills, you know, it's no longer just important, you know, I think it's absolutely core to the labor market, and we will see that sort of, you know, see that as a central function, you know, we will see that sort of, you know, increase over time. And, you know, people will say we're also likely to see a shift to the right in terms of basic digital skills increasingly becoming advanced compared to what we might view as basic previously. All of this for me, you know, points to the fact that we need to find a way to make sure that everyone continues to have the opportunity to learn new skills. You know, if we look forward over the next 10 years, for instance, it's reasonable to assume that 80% of the likely workforce, you know, at the end of the next decade are already in work. So whether it's to drive long-term growth to address the impact of the current situation or to deal with the fast pace of technological change, you know, the reality is that we would need people to upskill for new skills. We will need to shift to a strong culture of lifelong learning, and we will need to recognize that it will no longer be just about what you learn, but equally important to think about how you continue to improve yourself and how adaptable your skills are to respond to new opportunities and shocks, and actually to deal with sectors as they grow and change over time. You know, typically, you know, this has been something that government's worried about, and, you know, it's fair to say that a lot of people see this as something for government to deal with. But I would say, you know, this is no longer something for government to just handle alone. You know, that time is absolutely gone. It has to be a genuinely collaborative effort where employers and individuals have an equal part to play. And I would probably say that businesses have a bigger part to play now more than ever before in recognizing the gains that investing in the skills of their workforce can have on their productivity and growth. You know, from the government's perspective, you know, addressing lifelong learning has, you know, and it will continue to be a big priority. You know, many people would have seen the PM speech a few weeks ago where he talked about the importance of investing in skills, the need to level up between further and higher education, and he emphasized the importance of reskilling and upskilling people. You know, he talked about the lifetime skills guarantee, which will help people to train and retrain at any stage of their lives and provide opportunities to develop skills for a changing world. And as he set out, you know, we want to create less of a distinction between FE and HE, give people more of a choice, and make it easier for people to be able to access that choice. The points he made about making it easier to get funding for higher technical courses, as you do for university degree, funding adults to a full level 3 qualification, you know, making it easier to undertake high quality apprenticeships, rolling out boot camps to provide more opportunities for people to develop digital skills. You know, these are all things that can help individuals build the skills that are most sought after by employers and can help individuals progress in work. You know, also boost their work prospects and ultimately make them more resilient as they adapt to changes in the labor market. So I'll probably end by saying that, you know, I won't pretend that we have all the answers, but I would like to leave us with three questions, which I know occupy the thoughts of my colleagues working on skills policy. And one is, how do we create a stronger culture of lifelong learning, making sure that everyone has the confidence, the time and the support to do this? We need more employer investment in skills. How do we encourage that? How do we change mindsets? And how do we address concerns about uncertainty of securing a return on investment? And finally, how do we build more stable partnerships between, you know, the public and private sectors so we can work together to build that skills adaptability that we will need in a rapidly changing world? Thank you very much.